Hey folks, this is Bill Bubba Bussey from the Rick and Bubba Show, and I just love Weather Brains. Those guys are twisted.
This time on Weather Brains, a massive winter storm pounds folks in the Central Plains with snow and ice.
Do you know at this point how many of the bigger towers have been damaged or down?
Yeah, we got about somewhere between 40 and 45.
Kevin Selly takes us for a close-up look at the massive work it will take to get power restored for residents in Nebraska. It's the story that's not getting much national attention.
I wonder why the national media is not reporting this story. They're blowing it off.
Plus, we'll check in with folks in another part of the country where it's not ice that's the problem, but snow, and lots of it.
118 inches, I think, is the all-time record in Denver, and they're already at 51.
Plus, the computer models are starting to look kind of interesting for folks in the South.
Somewhere in the deep South, somebody might have an issue with freezing rain next week.
That and lots more coming up. Welcome to episode number 50 of Weather Brains, the weather netcast that's all about, you guessed it, the weather. Produced by the Birmingham, Alabama-based Weather Company, I'm David Black, along with James Spann, chief meteorologist from ABC 3340 in Birmingham. Along with us as well this time, Bill Murray, Kevin Selly, J.B. Elliott, and Brian Peters. Hey, Mr. Spann, what you know?
Boy, what a cast of suspects on this program.
Yeah, I tell you what, it's scary. No telling what people are going to come up with, and we'll try not to run anybody off. Actually, I think we have an interesting show this time. We've got some interesting topics to talk about involving old man winter, and we don't have any old man winter to worry about in the southern part of the country, it seems like.
Well, you know, we might in about 8 or 9 days. I'm not saying the, you know, Interstate 20 where we are, but maybe Interstate 40. Little Rock and, you know, Nashville and Knoxville and Memphis. Middle of next week looks like it might be an overrunning type event with shallow cold air at the surface and moist air going on top of that. And, you know, that's not a snow deal. That's an ice deal, freezing rain. And I think our buddy Kevin Selly might have some issues with that before we do. So nice having Kevin on here so we can give us a heads up. I mean, what's worth Big D out there, Kev?
See what's coming upstream. Some of the broadcast stations are already running the panic warnings here. That started over the weekend, so hey, we're going to watch it and see.
Forget them. What do you think?
What do I think? I think I'm going to wait and see. I don't like to do a panic. It's funny to me that, you know, we can look out so far now, but I think sometimes that may tend to confuse people a little bit. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I just wanted to ask real quickly, Kevin, you have, I assume, the same arrangement with some of the grocery chains in Texas that everybody knows that Spann has in Alabama?
I wish. I've been trying for that for years.
I mean, all he has to say is ice possible, and that's it. You know, the bread lines go nuts.
He's much more famous in Birmingham than I am in Dallas, so he gets those big payoffs, I know.
All right. Mr. Elliott, do you concur on the possibility of what we're hearing for the southern states in the next week or so?
9 days out.
Yeah, kind of tough to call that far, huh?
Do I hear? I have very little faith beyond 5 days, really. But
I was hearing a little shaky confidence there in the forecast. But
see, I'm the only one here stupid enough to go out and make these calls. But understand, you have to be real broad here, which is what I'm saying. I mean, somewhere in the deep South, and that means it might be, you know, Tennessee or Arkansas or Georgia. Somebody might have an issue with freezing rain in next week. And that's, I think we are close enough to make that assumption now. You know, trying to be specific, that is pretty stupid. I mean, sometimes we don't know how a winter storm is going to unfold, you know, 12 hours in advance, much less 8 days in advance. But I think that the pattern favors something like this. So it'll be fun to watch all this unfold.
Yeah, it's worth it to say those things and say, hey, heads up, look what's, you know, kind of developing off into the future. But then when some of the news types take it and run and get a little carried away, that's a little frustrating.
Yeah, well, don't get me started on that.
just yet another occasion. Now, Bill Murray takes part in the forecast process here, too. So, Bill, let me just put you on the spot for a minute. Have you any wisdom to impart at this early stage of a possible wintry forecast?
Yeah, David, I actually mentioned it in the morning forecast this morning because, you know, as we were winding down the severe weather last night, you know, I looked out at the GFS, and sure enough, it did look like an overrunning event, possibly, you know, probably northwest of Birmingham, but, you know, did mention it, gets all the snow fans excited, and kind of brings out the kid in everyone a little bit.
Mm. Yeah, well, talking about this snow and ice, Kevin, you've been talking with somebody who's really been dealing with some ice lately.
I really did, David. You know, they had as many as 30,000 customers at one time for the Nebraska Public Power District were without power at the height of an ice storm that came through the state around the first of the year. And they tell me that at one point, 600 miles of high-voltage transmission lines were impacted by the storm. And of that, between 150 and 175 miles were on the ground.
Ouch.
So when I started to see some, I know, it was amazing. When I started to see some of those pictures and the towers iced over and then down across the state, I called Dennis Schroeder, who is an engineer with the Nebraska Public Power District, and he gave me some insight into what it takes to bring those towers down and then how they first find out about it.
Once the icing starts and it's getting bad, what's the first indication that there's a problem with one of these big lines, that it's in trouble? Obviously, the power goes out, but you must know something before people start calling in.
Well, on the big lines, really, you know, they're kind of our high-voltage grid, so they don't feed people directly. So the indication there is we have a control center that monitors all our generation and high-voltage transmission lines. So they'll see breaker. Basically, what happens is breaker operations, where something happens, the line either breaks, or what's happened a lot on this one is we have, you know, the phase wires is the wires that actually carry the current, and then above those are two what are called shield wires, mm-hmm. and they're there just for lightning protection.
Oh.
So the purpose of those is so if there's lightning, they take the hit, the conductors don't, and then we don't have a breaker operation because of it. So what happened a lot here is the shield wires were breaking and dropping into the phase wires and tripping the line out.
Wow.
So that's kind of the first indication was the ice had built up so heavy on those steel shield wires that they were breaking and falling down, hitting the conductors, and then that trips the breakers and trips the line out of service.
And does that trigger an alarm for you? Do you get some sort of feedback? Is there a regulation difference? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, we have an operation center that's manned, you know, 24/7 mm-hmm. that monitors the condition of every line, and yeah, they get an immediate alarm that line is tripped out.
And can they tell exactly where that is? Is it a region thing? How does that work?
Yeah, I mean, they know the exact transmission line, and we actually have fault locators that can tell them, you know, the location of the fault.
So narrowing it down.
They know so many miles from a substation.
Yeah,
they narrow down where that occurs.
Well, now I'm fixated on these towers, especially having seen some of the pictures. Help me understand some of the physics here. What is going to bring one of these down? Now, probably not just wind, but you've got the ice. So is the ice enough? Is it wind and ice? How do these things turn over like they did?
Yeah, in this case, it was a combination of both the ice and the wind. You know, the ice accumulation basically was more than they were designed for.
And do you know what are those numbers?
Well, we have a lot of evidence, and we've got pictures indicating where we had what we call up to 2 inches of radial ice.
Mm-hmm.
And by that, we mean 2 inches around the entire diameter of the wire. So that ends up being like on a one-inch wire, so that means then that it ends up being about 5 inches in diameter total.
And do you know what weight that translates into?
Yeah, that would translate into somewhere around 8 pounds per foot.
8 pounds per foot.
Right.
And then typically how much space is in between the big towers?
These are about, these particular towers were quarter mile span, so they're about 1,350 feet.
Mm. And how many lines that would become as much as 5 inches thick?
Okay, see, in this particular, it's a double circuit line, which had a total of 10 wires.
Oh, my. So at the end of all that, you're talking a lot of weight.
Yeah. So it'd be, so if you take 10 wires times 8 pounds times 1,350 feet,
you're the engineer. I'm going to let you do that math.
That'd be about 108,000 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
Weight.
So then the towers that gave, it's
that,
not...
That
the...
doesn't include any wind load. You know, then really to do that, then you take the wind
Ryan.
Force on that big of a diameter, and that is significant also. You know, that causes it, because you got this weight down, now you have the weight trying to topple it over, and that's exactly
right.
What happens, they toppled over then.
And do you have some numbers that just to give us a feel then what the wind adds?
You know, I don't have I know there was significant wind. I didn't get any data on what the wind speed was. But,
right.
You know, those calculations could be done.
Right. Well, and I know, I guess, more from looking at hurricane studies and whatnot, that the pressure exerted by the wind goes up exponentially as the speed goes up, as opposed to just at a flat rate.
Exactly.
Boy. So am I understanding correctly, then, it's not the ice and the wind on the tower, but the extra weight from the wire that buckles the tower.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the weight of the wire. The wire, the ice builds up on the wire. Of course, the wire is supported by the tower.
Mm-hmm.
And then the wind also hits the wire. So, yeah, it's really the weight on the wires that are attached to the towers, not the towers themselves.
So now these towers, the ones that go over or buckle, you can't repair those, can you?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's maybe some parts of them that are salvageable, like mm-hmm. the very bottom part, but we'll have to replace everything, you know, almost everything.
And you don't have, I imagine you don't have spare towers lying around somewhere.
No, we don't.
So they have to be crafted.
Yeah.
And how long does that take?
Well, we're doing some checking on that right now. We have a steel supplier that's starting, you know, production, you know, basically right away on. We have a couple other lines that has less damage on them that we're trying to get in first.
Mm-hmm. So they jump right in.
Yeah, they jump. You know, that was one good thing about the utility industry. The suppliers and the people, they all know that when you get in these situations, it's an emergency, and they really do some pretty heroic things to get things going again.
And it always seems in every event, no matter where it is, that the crews from the surrounding states always pitch in.
Yes.
That's really nice.
Right.
You have some amazing video on your website. There's one stretch that is the smaller poles.
Oh.
It looks like about a mile long.
Yeah.
And these things went down just straight across the road
paralleled.
It looks like they were placed there.
Yeah, I took that video.
Oh, it's amazing. Tell me what that was like flying over that.
Well, you know, that's right. That was kind of the first thing you said. You know, it looked like somebody just went and laid them there. You know, just that... The way it turned, the wind just put them directly across the road like that.
That's one of the marvels of weather, I guess, like the egg getting through the tornado or something like that.
Right.
Now, this must be a significant increase in the level of difficulty for your crews. I mean, if a tornado comes through and blows stuff down, well, it's gone when you go to fix it. But you've still got ice, right?
Yeah, most of it has melted off.
But immediately they're trying to get out there, and that's an extra added level of danger. Can you talk about that?
The roads were horrible. You know, we were even, you know, like I say, I was flying around that helicopter, and we'd land at the hangar to refuel, and you couldn't hardly walk to the hangar. It was an inch thick ice all over the runway and the taxiways and everything.
Wow. Do you know, at this point, how many of the bigger towers have been damaged or down?
Yeah, we got about... somewhere between 40 and 45.
Oh, I had no idea it was that many.
Yeah.
Is it too early to talk about the cost, then, of that?
Yeah, I mean, I know they're working on that, but I haven't seen any of those numbers yet. But we're just saying tens of millions right now. It's our total estimated cost, and that particular line alone will be in the $10 million at least, probably. It'd take a while to recover from.
Well, now, guys, the president has declared much of Nebraska a disaster area, and that will free up some federal aid for relief and rebuilding. But we referenced those amazing pictures and a great video on their website, and I would love to have anybody who wanted to take a look at that. It's NPPD.com, and that stands for Nebraska Public Power District. Really interesting stuff, guys.
Tell you what, you really develop an appreciation for the work it takes to straighten that kind of a mess out. They could have hundreds and hundreds of people in a small area working, and it's still got to take a huge amount of time when you have that much destruction. It's amazing.
Yeah, they're talking in some of the outlying areas, it's going to be months before people get their regular service back. What they're doing now in a lot of places is actually putting up generators, believe it or not, to service some of the outlying areas.
And Mr. Schroeder was talking about, if I caught this right, he was saying, was it 8 pounds per foot of additional weight the ice causes? I think that's what he said.
I didn't write them down as we were listening, but the wire, a 1-inch wire in this instance had became 5 inches in diameter with 2 inches of ice on either side of it. And then that there were, I think he said, eight wires on each one.
Man.
So that is a tremendous amount of weight. What I didn't know, what I thought was interesting, is those top two wires, and you see those on these big lines anywhere. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that those were for lightning. That's to attract the lightning, to keep the lightning off of the power lines, which I thought was interesting.
Tell you
no
what,
kidding.
That's hard work. But I was doing a little math here, which is very, very dangerous for me to do. But if that if that's 8 pounds per foot, then that's like a couple hundred feet, 250 feet worth of line that would mm-hmm. have an additional ton of weight just loading those towers down, 250 feet. And those guys have all those miles. So I really do. First, I sympathize for those. I feel for those people out there having to put up with that. But the workload to get that back all up and running is phenomenal, too.
Yeah, I highly recommend the video. That part we were talking about is just really amazing to see, especially from the air with those power poles just laid down across a road like that.
NPPD.com, right?
NPPD.com. It's a Nebraska Public Power District.
Kevin, have you heard anything at all about how many livestock have been lost?
No, didn't get any of that information. I can certainly check on it for next time, but I have not heard. I know that was one of their concerns, and even in some of the wintry weather in Colorado, they'd lost many, many, many heads in years past, and they were trying their hardest to not have that happen again this time, but I'm afraid I don't have any counts for you, JB.
I saw one report from southeast Colorado where a herd of 600 had just vanished, and they were afraid they may be covered with snow and dead.
Wow.
Kevin, that's fascinating about the shield wires, you know, like that he was talking about, because I think that's one of the recommendations that the experts now have for the big stadiums, you know, is to put these shield wires over the crowds, because apparently that, you know, can do, you know, some element of protection for a crowd, and I think that's pretty amazing. But I don't know if y'all saw, last week we posted on the blog at ABC 3340 a website called Extreme Instability. A storm chaser named Mike Hollingshead maintains this. He lives in Kansas, and the still pictures that he had on that site were so amazing that this site got disseminated all over the web, and it ended up bringing down an entire internet company that you know was hosting it, because people were, you know, coming in to see these pictures, and it really was amazing to see this 3-inch casing of ice on everything. It was just incredible.
I wonder why the national media is not reporting this story. You know, you turn on the news, the national news, and they're talking about record warmth in New York, and that's true. That's a big story. I'll give them that. But you know, this stuff barely got any play in the national media. This has been a harsh winter with these historic ice storms and blizzards, and it's just like they're blowing it off. And that's what makes me wonder. I mean, if you live in, you know, New York or San Francisco, if it happens there, it's big news. But you get this kind of ice storm in Nebraska, and it just nobody cares, which is very disturbing.
And then the one story that I did see, James, they showed a guy in a garage cooking on a barbecue grill, which is just absolutely one of the worst things you could possibly do when the power's out.
Extremely dangerous. And and while folks in the Plains states there are, of course, having to deal with this tremendous ice storm and the damage, of course, folks in the Rockies are still digging out from major winter weather there. If you've read J.B. Elliott's blog post at abc3340.com, you already know about Denver's snowfall standing at what is it, JB, 49 inches so far for the season?
I believe so, and 93 inches at Evergreen. That's just in the mountains.
Unreal. More than 2 feet of snow remaining on the ground in some parts of northern Colorado as we record this netcast. And folks to the west of Denver had to deal with hurricane-force winds overnight. People in the Denver area have been pounded not once, but 3 times by heavy snow, and it's getting a little old for some. We spoke with Michael, doesn't want to give his last name. He works for Gumbo's, a restaurant in downtown Denver. You guys have had snow and more snow on top of the snow, so what's it like to deal with in your business?
It sucks.
What's the worst part of it?
It's really hurting business. You know, we work in a restaurant. People don't want to go out, so we still have to come to work, but we're not making as much money as we usually would be at this time. You know, and we got a lot of Christmas parties that canceled over the last couple of weeks, and we're still getting hit with snow. We're still getting hit with high winds, and we're expecting another snowstorm later this week.
So you're not really enthusiastic about it at this point, are you?
Not at this point. I mean, it's fine for the ski towns, but even when you want to go skiing, if the roads are closed, you can't get up there, you know?
Pretty to look at, but not good for business.
Pretty much.
Hey, Michael, good luck to you. I hope the snow stops.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Now, while Michael is not happy with the snow, some other businesses there are thriving. Blake Williams is director of sales and marketing for Kocal Landscape in Denver. He's been one of those people doing a lot of shoveling lately. What is that like to deal with?
Well, frustrating for the majority, I would say, of Denverites. Me personally, I enjoy it a little bit. It forces me to shovel snow and get a little exercise.
How much snow have you been shoveling?
Oh, great question. I think the first storm was 24 inch, the second storm was about 12, and the third was probably about 8 to 10 at my home. But the kind of blessing in disguise, I'm in the landscape industry, and we live in a desert. We get 17 inches of measured precipitation annually. So it's refreshing to know that we will not probably be in the drought situations that we were in the early 2001-2002 seasons.
What's this doing to your business right now?
We are slammed in our business. We have probably, 160 snowplow trucks company-wide, and they're all running hard. People are tired. Customers are tired. They're tired of seeing invoices. They're tired of seeing snow. And actually, long-range forecasts are calling for another big one this Friday or Saturday, potentially.
So this is just life in the Rockies?
This is atypical for Denver. We usually get some snow, but not these big blizzard-like conditions. Some people are quite frustrated today because they had everything all shoveled and cleaned out, and we had big winds last night, anywhere from 30 to 100 miles an hour, depending on the area. Some areas where roads were closed, and a lot of people had to dig back out everything they'd already shoveled, depending on where they lived. So people are tired of shovels. Most hardware stores are sold out of shovels. Shovels have been a hot commodity. I even repaired mine with two hinges, so it broke.
Are you getting tired of shoveling?
Yeah, I'd say I'm tired of it. They sent out a little email that there's some neighborhood kids, and I would say if we get hammered again with another two-footer, I'll let the 18-year-olds have at it and give my 45-year-old back a break.
Tell me a little bit about your business, because I thought when I heard landscape, I figured you were dead, and you're telling me you're doing well.
Exactly. Well, we have what we call kind of a 7-5 climate. I mean, we've got 7 months out of the year to try to make money, 5 months how to figure out not to lose it all, typically. But when we get snows of this magnitude, you know, we have a lot of retail accounts, apartments, office buildings, you know, every maintenance account that we have snow on, they've got to get rid of all this. And we're frankly running out of places to put it.
So you don't mind the snow?
No, we don't. I mean, you know, it helps us because, frankly, we have to keep these people on payroll, and we have these trucks and this equipment on just sitting here idle. You know, we have to keep these guys on our payroll all winter long, whether it snows or not. And we have a lot of winters where we don't get much snow. You know, maybe a couple inches here, a couple inches there, and then all melts the next day. So this is definitely atypical to get this much snow, particularly this frequency, you know, back to back to back, and yet another one, the fourth one in the forecast. So at this rate, I'm beginning to wonder when we will see green grass in this town to be able to mow, but hopefully March or April.
In your opinion, are the city governments responding to this well?
In my opinion, yes. You know, they have taken quite a bit of criticism, as has the airport. I think it's very easy for people to get frustrated, people being the general population. I have a bit of an insider's knowledge. I know the brain damage that it takes. You know, if you were to go back in the back of our shop right now, we have four bays. You know, there's transmission scattered, there's welders going, there's, you know, bent metal everywhere from equipment failures. You know, this is a very, very heavy snow. So it's hard on people, it's hard on equipment. You got guys staying up doing 12-hour shifts, they're catching a hotel room wherever they can sleep, you know, so they don't have to travel, and then they're just going on to the next shift. So I think all in all, they did a great job with the major roads and highways and arterials. I think the biggest complaint has been side streets and trash removal. They had some difficulties there, but Mayor Hickenlooper here in Denver has committed to making some changes and is evaluating maybe putting plows on trash trucks and that sort of thing. It's been interesting. You know, a lot of people are getting frustrated, but, you know, you just got to be patient and just grin, bear it, and say you live, you know, in the Rockies.
That's Blake Williams in Denver dealing with the snow. So at least we don't have to deal with what folks in Nebraska and Colorado have to deal with here, being here in the South. I'm grateful for that.
Like that Cajun music that was playing in the background of that first guy.
Well, I tell you what, they're halfway to their all-time record nearly, David.
Really?
118 inches, I think, is the all-time record in Denver, and they're already at 51. And probably going to get another 8 to 10 inches Thursday night and Friday. So it's going to end up being a snowy season. But I think they're probably all in all pretty glad because this is a real drought buster for those guys.
I guess if you can get to the ski runs to enjoy them, you can have a field day and have a blast.
Yeah, and a lot of people had trouble on Saturday. Did y'all see that avalanche in Berthoud Pass that took the cars over the edge of the cliff? And luckily nobody died in that event. But
scary.
But that was caused by wind and all that snowpack that's out there.
You know, I was just thinking here, we're coming up on episode 52 of Weather Brains before too much longer. And Brian Peters has really been racking his brain trying to think of what would the appropriate celebration be. And I guess one thing I might be, you know, throwing in the mix here, Brian, would be a skiing vacation for the entire Weather Brains crew, and we would really appreciate your arranging that.
I'd be happy to arrange that. Just give me your credit card.
Yeah, Span can help with that. He's got the Weather Brains card.
Want to mention something about the snow. This is going to be nice for the ski resorts. Not very good for Denver and all the travel that it disrupted. But keep in mind, all that snow has got to melt.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And come the spring, I think the big story will become flooding.
Very good point.
I hope you're wrong, but I have a feeling you're right. There's just too much snow.
Yeah, with all the snow, and I was listening carefully to the numbers that Bill was just stating. With all that snow, you know, you kind of hope some of it will evaporate or sublimate here over the next couple of months. But if they get as much in the rest of the season as they've already had, it could really be a record flooding kind of situation for the springtime.
Mm-hmm. Well, just because we're talking about the amounts of snow, and we were working on a piece with some of the folks from the Denver International Airport, and we'll have that, I think, coming up here before too long. But the little fact that came to mind as I was talking to them, as we were talking about how much snow there was, they told me in clearing off the first storm, this was the pre-Christmas storm, somebody sat and figured out they moved enough snow around that if you equated it to plowing a single road, they would have plowed a road that went from Denver to San Francisco just on that first storm.
Goodness gracious. Well, like I said earlier, I feel for those folks. You know, I don't know a soul in the state of Nebraska, but I really do sympathize with what some of those people in those small towns like James was talking about are going through. Some of those folks are wondering, literally, probably, when are we going to get our lights back on? And you sure, I don't know about you guys, I take my power for granted, and I shouldn't do that. You shouldn't do that. So I really hope that they're able to get those people back up and running soon. Mr. Spann, you've been working on some things involving the weather in the South, specifically in the state of Alabama. Tell me what's going on with that.
Well, it's a busy time of the year for us, David. You know, 10 years ago when we signed on the station, we wanted to take the show on the road. We started the Storm Alert Tour, and this is year number 10, and we start that here in a few weeks. We just announced the schedule today. We do that every year during the month of February, and we go to various locations around the state and teach people a bit of severe weather, entertain them a little bit, and give some stuff away. And we'll kick off the Storm Tour on the 1st of February, and we will be in Tuscaloosa that night at Shelton State, and then we go to locations all over. We got that up on the website. So in January, we always get that show together, and also our brand new severe weather DVD was just released today. This year, the theme is 10 years of Alabama weather, and it's been a wild ride. And we look back at the 10-year history of the station and the operation here and the weather events we've covered, and that will be available free of charge at sponsor locations. We'll put those up on the web later this week. So a lot of things going on here. Brian Peters is pumped because he got second billing on the DVD.
Ooh! We will not hear the end of that, will we?
He's
trying
excited
to figure out who got that, who made that mistake.
But anyway, Bill Castle puts Castle does all the work. Quite frankly, he does all the work on the tour and the DVD, and whenever he's involved, it's really good stuff. So we look forward to seeing people, and it'll start up here in
About 4 weeks or so, three weeks or so.
Anything Bill does is done well. So I know that'll be a well-done piece.
And I tell you what, I'm looking at these Alaska observations here, and boy, you know, I'm seeing some pressures up there of 30.65 inches, and temperatures as cold as 48 below zero as we do this podcast. And JB dug up some amazing numbers around the Arctic on the other side in Siberia. JB, why don't you share some of that stuff? Pretty cold up there, huh?
Yeah, 77 below at that famous site in eastern Siberia that is billed as the world's coldest continued inhabited place. O-J-M-J-A-K-O-N. I do not know how to pronounce it, but it is a continuously inhabited town. 77 below zero tonight. They had 73 below, I think, this morning.
Has anybody experienced numbers like that?
Not me.
Yeah. Yeah, they have their garbage trucks. They have to keep the motor running continuously, and when they have to, if they have to dig a grave to bury someone, they have to build a big fire over where they're going to dig the grave to even soften the ground up enough to dig.
Good grief.
Wow, there's a job for you.
Mm.
All right, James.
Older than a grave digger's rear end in Siberia.
Something like that. James, you got on the soapbox a few minutes ago about the news media's coverage of the winter storm conditions, or I should say lack of coverage of some of the winter storm events happening in the Central Plains.
Yes.
Can I get on my soapbox for just a quick 30 seconds or so about something similar?
Air it out, brother. Air it out. Come on.
Just
preach on.
Somebody else asked me if you have the same reaction to this. I saw a headline on CNN's news page that said, and I quote, scientist, quoting a scientist, NASA found life on Mars and killed it. That's a direct quote. So I read that headline and I think, what? NASA deliberately or accidentally, whatever, NASA in fact kill some life form on Mars? That's a very factual statement. You read the very first lead sentence of the story, and it says, and I quote, two NASA space probes that visited Mars 30 years ago may have found alien microbes on the red planet and inadvertently killed them, a scientist is theorizing. End quote. Now, does that sound like what the headline said to you guys?
No.
No.
I thought that was totally misleading. And that just to me struck me as irresponsible journalism, because the headline passed it off as a fact, and the rest of the story said may. And this is a theory that, you know, some scientists are promoting, and that's fine. But James, you've got things about national coverage that irritates you, and I just want you to know you're not the only one.
I understand.
What bothers me, you know, if they botch stuff that we understand, what are they botching stuff that we don't understand?
It really builds
up my distrust.
I know.
I understand in the newspaper publishing industry, the headlines are written by a different person from who wrote the story.
Right.
Yes.
Well, you know.
Actually, guys, here, I got another forecast for you. This is big, above-the-fold front page on the Dallas Morning News on Friday. The hottest ever, Resurgent El Nino high level of greenhouse gases could make 2007 the world's warmest year on record. So there's your extended forecast, guys.
Let's send that guy up to Siberia and let him camp out there with his underwear on for a few days. See what he thinks.
It's funny because the dateline is from London. I don't quite know how that happened, but anyway.
Okay.
There's a big graph in USA Today showing the parts of the world that have exceptionally warm weather. 2006 was the warmest year since 1951, and China was one of the entries.
Well, we'll be hearing more about temperature and climate this year, probably more than we've ever heard, I don't doubt.
2006 turned out to be the warmest year on record in Oslo.
Okay.
I've got to run down to the store because Kevin says we're going to have ice next week in Texas. So
get some bread, okay?
Yeah, I am, man. Yeah.
Whole week.
Yep, I'll call you as soon as it starts.
It's healthier.
Yeah, great.
Here's a look at what's coming up on Weather Brains.
It started out as a private operation. Abbott Lawrence Roach was just 24 years old, had graduated from MIT, and his parents said, well, now you're a college graduate, what are you going to do with your life?
The year was 1885. President Chester Arthur will dedicate the Washington Monument. The first successful appendectomy will be performed. Abbott Roach was just starting out in life, but he already knew what he wanted to do. It was the fascinating field of meteorology that had him spellbound.
He said, I want to open a weather research center and observatory here in the United States.
Roach had no way to realize it at the time, but the small stone weather observatory he built for $3,500 would stand the test of time. The Blue Hill Observatory is still taking weather measurements after setting records no other facility can touch.
We have accomplished some amazing things. Some of the first records of the upper atmosphere using a kite meteorograph was done here at Blue Hill, especially in the 1890s.
Brian Peters takes us to the Blue Hill Observatory, where Abbot Roach's dream lives on today, nearly 122 years later. It's a trip through weather history, and it's next time on Weather Brains. We hope you can join us for that. If you'd like to contact the Weather Geeks here at Weather Brains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. If you'd like to leave a voicemail for us, our number is 206-339-5482. 206-339-5482. A reminder that the opinions expressed on Weather Brains are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. And some of the music provided during this netcast came from the Pod Show PodSafe Music Network, online at music.podshow.com. For James Spann, J.B. Elliott, Brian Peters, Bill Murray, and Kevin Selly, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening. We hope you'll be able to join us again for the next edition of Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright. Yes, sir?
You're getting better and better and better, David.
Oh, you're
so, the networks.
You're so kind. Do I need to send you another $10?
15.
Okay. Weather Brains is copyright 2007, all rights reserved. Fun show. Thanks, guys. Enjoyed that.
Have a good one, guys.